Thank you, Carol.
Okay, and now for our sermon, I give you Amy McCracken talking about generosity and her pilgrimage to Tibet.
Hi, everyone. Am I live? I am alive, thankfully. I just want to note that the photographs are just for you to enjoy. They're not in a certain order. I took them more on the artistic front. They're more images for you just to enjoy. And I've only been back about 10 days, and so I quickly made them over at Sam's camera, put a plug in for them. And they're not professional. So anyway, just enjoy the images. I wanted to introduce myself a little bit. I know that, you know, some words were sent out, and I grew up in Bedford, and in my childhood, when I was 8 years old, I had my first spiritual awakening. I had horses, and I was in the horse field, and I got on my knees and I begged, you know, what is this life about? And I got the answer right then and there. I got the answer that it was an inner journey, not an outer journey. But I didn't really know what to do with that as a young child. And anyway, just the trajectory of my life, I first came to Buddhism in... There are pictures that are sideways, so you just have to practice neck stretches for those. By accident, in the 80s, I went to a conference and I was being certified in a type of emotional release work, holotropic breath work. And I was going to see the head of this community and work on my certification process. And little did I ever look at the program that this other speaker was speaking there. And when he spoke, he's a well-known writer in what's considered the Hinayana, the Buddhism that comes more from Thailand, you know, in the Asian aspects of the world, Jack Kornfield. Many of you probably read his books. And I couldn't believe the words that he was saying. And I saw him in the hall, and I said to him, my gosh, you know, your words, they've touched me so deeply. And he just looked at me and he said, it's the Dharma. And sort of this energy rush went through my body. And from that point on, I've been on and off in my life. I've had very strong periods of studying and practicing the Dharma. And the Dharma, what that actually means, many of you may know, but that those are the words of Buddha Shakyamuni. Also, you know, this traveling to Tibet, the mission of this trip was purifying negative karma and increasing positive karma. Of course, karma is cause and effect. It's our words, our actions, and our deeds, and what happens from those words, actions, and deeds. I was taken by the fact that these Tibetans, they have very little. I was in the area of the earthquake 2 years ago in Yushu. There was a very 7.5 point earthquake that devastated many, many monasteries, many homes. And these people are, there's no running water there. There's electricity from solar panels. You know, there's no running electricity. The people are living very sustainable lives. They live with yaks. Basically, the yak is the center of their life. The yak dung heats their home, cooks their food. The yak milk is, they make their butter. their cheese, their tea, you know, it's the meat they eat, and of course the fur they use as well. But the spirit of generosity, these are retreat houses in the mountains that these lamas, you know, will spend anywhere from a year to 12 years doing a silent retreat. The spirit of generosity that these people gave, anytime we saw them, we would be invited into their homes, which consisted of a tent. The tent was, you know, given by the Chinese government after the earthquake, and they've been living in these tents for 2.5 years now. And you know, the minute you walked in, they would be offering you tea. They'd be offering you yogurt. They'd be offering you biscuits that they had made. None of them have ovens. They'd, you know, cook over the fire. And they'd be offering you medicine. They'd be offering you clothing. I, at one point, was just commenting on a woman's jewelry and saying that, you know, I'd be curious if I could find an artisan to make something similar. And she took off her earrings and gave them to me. We commented on a woman's belt, and she started to give it to us. The interesting thing when I was, you know, given the earrings was I was saying, no, 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 please. And I burst into tears because it was very clear that these people had nothing. And here I'm coming from the United States. And it was just very difficult for me to accept. And the Lama that we were with, he said, Amy, no means yes in Tibetan. And not only did they give me earrings, they gave everyone in the group a gift. The next sister gave somebody else earrings. The mother took off her gold ring to give to somebody. The spirit of generosity of the Tibetans, you know, had a great, great impact on me. And I had a lot of fun thinking about, you know, what I was going to talk about, and I actually did some of my own discovery and learned quite a bit. It says here that generosity is not solely based on one's economic status, but instead includes the individual's pure intention of looking out for society's common good and giving from the heart. Generosity should reflect the individual's passion to help others. Generosity is the antidote of the self-chosen poison called greed. The natural way that Tibetans express generosity is that with each prayer and intention in life, it's the intention of doing it for the benefit of all sentient beings, to benefit and liberate from this occupation with self-centeredness that we have as humans. As you see these photos, you can see how, you know, they would, there's prayer flags everywhere. You can see here in the food, you know, there's just abundance that they would lay before us. There was never a time that we weren't treated as almost royalty in the realm of what they had. You know, they would always treat us with their utmost. It was amazing. Even the time that they continually spend in prayer. The Tibetans, you know, Buddhism has been there for so long, and Tibet was a closed country before 1959, basically. And so it was very isolated. And so Buddhism was just immersed into families. The families are great practitioners. Many of them have been to monasteries for a part of their life. Oftentimes, you know, one will go to a monastery basically for the need of food and shelter. Many times children go there, but they learn so much of the Dharma. You see them in towns continually with their malas. A mala is prayer beads that actually keep the mind from the daily thinking of attachment and aversion and greed and some of the things. It's a focuser. But the thing is that it also, the mala, is they're saying a prayer. And, you know, the recitation of these mantras is always for the benefit of sentient beings. Always is that intention. I wanted to just, I found little comments. It says, you know, William Walsh stated, a generous action is its own reward. And we know that. We know how great it feels to give. When you give, you have that sense of you know, freeing yourself. You have that sense of liberating yourself. It says, we make a generous, spirited, sincere gesture because it is rewarding and brings us satisfaction. One of the early people that brought Buddhism to Tibet was a man, Lord Gampopa, and he wrote this book. He lived from 1074 to 1153 CE. And that's the back of a woman's dress. You see the headdress that they wear. You can see that a little better. Still, you know, the nomadic clothing. These people had never seen North Americans. They, you know, would be awestruck at one of the girls on the trip had red hair. Another was African American with dreadlocks, and you know, they would just want to touch or feel their hair. One of the reasons that I really relate to this book and use it a lot for knowledge, but that's Lama Karma in the middle, and his father was on the left and his brother on the right. His father is 64 years old and a great practitioner, practiced all the time, in the morning, in the afternoon. Anyway, Gampopa, one of the reasons I think that I relate is that he was a householder. And, you know, most of the great beings in Tibetan Buddhism are these lamas. And to be a lama, what you do is you do a 3-year, 3-month, 3-day retreat, which is where you're in a retreat setting, set aside from the world, and you practice in actually a box. You're in the box for about 20 hours a day. You're having practices taught to you all the time. Lama Karma has done 2 3-year retreats. That's 6 years in seclusion, in a setting of really looking at what your mind is doing. This is a time that they're really looking. Anyway, Gampopa was a householder, and he wrote many texts, and this was his most significant, and he said, for anyone who wants to know me or see me, studying this text is the same as knowing me. This is you can see that young monks were all on a camping trip, and they were doing a long life puja. Puja is a prayer, a day of prayer, where they're reciting texts. And these are the family members and the townspeople that came out to be with them. And these were the offerings that they brought. All offerings. And then, of course, they gave us a, that's, you see the pair of earrings that the girl has on? Those are like the ones that were given to me. It says here, generosity practice is a special method to cut attachment to anything for one's own benefit. The practice is especially designed to show how to open one's heart and mind and to learn to share all the necessary things, such as skills, wisdom, with others, particularly those who are destitute and unprotected. Somebody made a great effort to create all the things we enjoy, both material and spiritual. We should realize this nature and take care of things well by using them in the best way and sharing them with all other sentient beings. This is our very important responsibility. The mind of generosity is also a special method for cutting narrowness, jealousy, and pride, actualizing harmony and freeing ourselves from stinginess and clinging. When one has openness in the mind of bodhicitta, bodhicitta, what that is bodhi is to be awake. Citta is mind. So it's this awakened mind, not dull, not bored, not sleepy, but vibrant. There's no need to own anything, to give to others, because one is already giving oneself to all sentient beings. When the mind is free of stinginess, it is already practicing generosity. It says, other practices of generosity are detailed in the text. Understand them well and apply them in practice. Generosity, there in Buddhism, there it's what's called to practice what's this bodhicitta. There are what's called six paramitas. These are six focuses to actually put the idea of bodhicitta into practice. And the first one is generosity. The second one is moral ethics. The third is patience. The fourth is discriminating wisdom awareness. And the fifth, let's see, generosity, moral ethics, patience, meditative concentration, discriminating wisdom awareness, and perseverance. And I wanted to talk about the first one, generosity. The paramitas are explained in the order they develop in the mind. Through the practice of generosity, one will accept the pure morality without focusing on material concerns. When one has moral ethics, one will have patience. When one has patience, one can make effort with perseverance. When one has made effort with perseverance, meditative concentration will arise. When one is absorbed in meditation concentration, one will perfectly realize the nature of all phenomena. The order is explained from lower to higher practice. Those which are lower are explained first, and the superior ones are explained later. Or another way, the order is from gross to subtle levels. Those which are more gross or easier to follow are explained first, and those which are subtle and more difficult to follow are explained later. What you're seeing there is called the life release. This is where you practice buying an animal so that it will never be killed for consumption. And so we that's what we were doing. And there's a whole ritual that goes along with it, and prayers. And so, once again, benefiting all sentient beings. The perfection of each of the six paramitas of the bodhisattvas, generosity and so forth, is characterized into four characteristics. They decrease their opposite. They produce the primordial wisdom of non-conceptual thought. They fulfill all that is desired. They mature all sentient beings. Generosity dispels poverty. Moral ethics achieves coolness. And coolness, which I think is a wonderful explanation, it says here, a disciplined person is said to be characterized by serene coolness, like the shade of a tree on a hot day, as opposed to the heated passions of an undisciplined person. Patience endures hatred. Perseverance applies to the Supreme One. Meditative concentration brings the mind inside, and wisdom awareness realizes the ultimate meaning. They are the cause to cross samsara and achieve nirvana. Samsara is the world of suffering, is this wheel of life that we're on right now. Generosity of generosity, moral ethics of generosity, patience of generosity, perseverance of generosity, meditative concentration of generosity, the wisdom awareness of generosity, and so forth. This makes the six paramitas 36. In the groupings, their generosity is grouped into two accumulations. That means what produces from giving generosity. Generosity and moral ethics are the accumulation of merit. As I said, the mission of this trip was purifying negative karma and creating merit, positive merit. Wisdom awareness is the accumulation of perfect wisdom. Patience, perseverance, and meditative concentration are included in both accumulations. Then it talks about the faults and virtues. That's actually upside down. That was a footprint. These people that have done these retreats come to a level of realization, which in this is in a cave, a very deep, dark cave, but those are footprints. You can see them very clearly. They're because they realize they have a different perspective of life than we do. This is not solid to them. And because of that, they're able to put their feet and hands into rock. They're able to walk through walls. The way we perceive things has a very strong impact on how our life turns out. I think this is repeating the pictures. This is a little bit of a reflection on the faults and virtues. It says, those who have not practiced generosity will always suffer from poverty and usually will be reborn as hungry ghosts. Even if reborn as a human and so forth, they will suffer from poverty and lack of necessities. Without the practice of generosity, we cannot benefit others, and so cannot achieve enlightenment. On the other hand, one who practices generosity will have happiness through wealth in all his different lifetimes. A thing which is given is yours. Things left in the house are not. A thing which is given has essence. Things left in the house have no essence. A thing which has been given need not be protected. Things kept in the house must be protected. A thing which is given is free from fear. Things kept in the house are with fear. A thing which is given is closer to enlightenment. Things left in the house go in the direction of the Maras. The practice of generosity will lead to vast wealth. Things left in the house do not bring much wealth. A thing which is given will bring inexhaustible wealth. Things kept in the house are exhaustible. It says here, the practice of giving wealth will stabilize others, bodies. Giving fearlessness will stabilize others' lives, and giving dharma stabilizes others' minds. Furthermore, the first two generosity practices establish others' happiness in this life. Giving dharma establishes, that's a very old ruin of a monastery up there in the top. Their happiness hereafter. It goes on to speak about the impure ways of giving, which are, you should not give traps or the skills for hunting wild animals and so forth. For those who ask, briefly, anything which can harm or cause suffering. It says, even though these generosities may be small, there is a method to increase them. And the method to increase them, this group of people are going from where we are to Lhasa, which is about a two-day trip by car. I think it's going to take them a month. They're doing prostrations. That's another way of purifying negative karma. The fact of dedication. Dedication is a very strong part of Tibetan Buddhism. And you can all practice this just by, when you give something generously, just think in your mind, I dedicate this for the benefit of all sentient beings. As simple as that. You can even put it, you know, a person's name, a loved one. I dedicate it for the betterment of so-and-so. The idea is that you multiply the merit that you've created by this act of dedication. And we can simplify this act of generosity even by our attitude if we see something beautiful. If we're having that sense of pleasure by, you know, a meal, you can dedicate that all that good feeling for the benefit of all sentient beings. Also, to increase the merit, adding compassion. Generosity supported by compassion means giving because you cannot bear the suffering of sentient beings, individually or in general. It says, one will become strong by giving food, one will achieve a good complexion by giving clothes, one will become stable by giving conveniences, one will have good eyesight by giving lamps. By giving fearlessness to those who are in fear, one will be unassailable by all the Maras and will become supremely powerful. And just to close, here's a gentle poem. The priceless gifts we give to each other are not the ones wrapped in fancy paper, but the gifts we give when we give of ourselves. It is the love that we share. It is the comfort we lend in times of need. It's the moments we spend together, helping each other follow our dreams. The most precious gifts we can give are the understanding and caring that comes from the heart. And each and every one of us has these gifts to offer through the gift of ourselves. Thank you. You can keep it, I don't know. That's up to everyone. You can stop it or...
Thank you.